Hello, all you heathens, heretics, headbangers, and slatterners. My name is Jerome Reuter, and I would like to welcome you to the very first episode of Metal Storm. Today, we're going to be talking about Queensryche's landmark album, Operation Mindcrime. This is one of the most important concept albums ever released. This is easily up there with 2112, The Wall, Tommy, or Quadrophenia. The 1980s. Pop culture loves to show a nostalgic view of it through rose-colored goggles. Flashy New Wave, Madonna, George Michael, The Shopping Mall, Miami Vice. But there's a lot more to it than that. There's a quote-unquote war on drugs, and I'm using giant air quotes here. There's excess, there's greed, hypocrisy, hubris from the government and religion. This is the Reagan 80s. While the inner cities are being torn apart by a crack cocaine epidemic, Nancy Reagan is telling us to just say no. And we all saw how that ended up. Great job. There's the moral majority in the PMRC taking music to task and charging them with the corruption of America's youth. There's an escalation in culture war and the generation gap. And before we get into the album question, let's take a look back at who Queensryche were, where they came from, and how they arrived at this point. So the lineup that is in place and will remain intact till the mid-90s consists of the rhythm section of drummer Scott Rockenfeld and bass player Eddie Jackson. And I've always felt Jackson is one of the most underappreciated bass players of the decade. You know, during this time period, there's no shortage of incredible players. Cliff Burton, Steve DiGiorgio, Billy Sheehan, Rudy Sarzo. And Jackson, if you really listen to those old Queensryche albums, his bass is the driving force on a lot of those songs. You also have the twin guitar team of Michael Wilton and Chris DeGarmo. DeGarmo is really at the core of the songwriting process, along with the group's frontman, Jeff Tate. And Tate's vocals are unmistakable. He is one of the voices of the 1980s that is instantly recognizable the moment you throw any of these old albums on. So they made their debut in 1983 with a self-titled EP that featured some great songs such as The Lady Wore Black. And their foray into the music video, specifically with Queen of the Reich, really demonstrates their ability to take songs and use it as complex storytelling. The music video, which is grade A quality cheese, I might add, features the band as five freedom fighters fighting off a demoness from the future who has a magic crystal and a computer that she plans on using to enslave humanity, as one does. Alright, they followed this up in 1984 with Warning, which is easily their best album. Amazing songs on that record, such as Take Hold of Flame, Enforce, Deliverance. They really show their ability to write complex material that's progressive, but still aggressive at the same time. And the highlight of this album really is Tate's vocals. He cuts through the mix on every single song. And if you really watch the Live in Tokyo VHS, which has been out of print for years, but much of it is available on YouTube, they are perfect live. They are on point. They are precise. They are focused. They are a force to be reckoned with. In 1986, they released Rage for Order. This is kind of the turning point in their discography. They start veering into new territories, new ideas. One of the big singles from the album is Gonna Get Close to You, which is a cover song. Photos that came with the album. This is an example of management deciding, hey, glam metal is the popular thing. Let's try to jump on the bandwagon. They all have elaborate hairstyles and these gaudy outfits. I mean, you would have thought that they might have raided the wardrobe of the Cramps. Thankfully that this didn't last long. Rage for Order, it's a very middle-of-the-road album. There's still some great songs in it, such as Walk in the Shadows, Surgical Strike, Chemical Youth. And then in 1988, we have the album in question, Operation Mindcrime. You should never judge a book by its cover, or an album for that matter, but the cover art of Mindcrime really sets the tone. We have this sea of revolutionaries, and if you open up the insert of the album, there's two faces. Far to the left, we see the mysterious Dr. X. He's going to be the main antagonist of our story. All the way to the right, we have Sister Mary, a nun who is going to be the primary love interest of the story. The band logo itself is at the very top, almost depicted in such a way that it almost is reminiscent of an actual armband that you might see a revolutionary wear, in the early 1920s or 30s. So from the cover, we sort of get a picture of what the content of this album is going to be. And as soon as the album is thrown on, we're confronted with a sort of a prologue called I Remember Now. Now, in order to get a more visual representation of this number, there was a box set that came out in the early 90s called Operation Live Crime, which featured a color booklet, a live VHS, as well as a live album. And the prologue itself, it's really short. We're introduced to Nicky, which is going to be our primary protagonist. We don't know anything about him yet. He just says, I remember how it started. I don't remember yesterday. I just remember doing what they told me. This segues into an instrumental piece entitled Anarchy X, which could be seen as the album's overture if this were an actual opera. And then we segue into one of the most important songs of the album, because it not only depicts a lot of things that were going on at the current time in the United States, but also in the fictional world of the album. So this really shows what Queensryche is doing here with this album in particular. Their fictional world that they're creating is a mirror image to the America of the 1980s. Now I see the payoffs everywhere I look. Who do you trust when everyone's a crook? Based on the title alone, you might think that Revolution Calling is a call to arms. Revolution Calling touches pretty much on every point that's going on with contemporary society in the United States. Tate sings about the communist plan, televangelism. He also introduces the audience to Dr. X when he sings, I heard of Dr. X, the man with a cure. Just watch the television, you'll see that there's something going on. One of the things that really establishes Revolution Calling further is the music video that was made for it. Because you have the band, you have a lot of images of that you might have seen on the news. There's like images of, you know, of protests, of preachers. So it's really is this juxtaposition of the song and, you know, the images that are real really firmly establishes that although this story that Queensryche is telling is obviously a fictitious story, it's very much rooted in what is going on right now in the country. We are in a culture war, we are under siege, and there has to be a stop. There has to be, you know, a change. And this will continue on in the next song, Operation Mindcrime, where we meet our main protagonist, Nicky. So what type of hero is Nicky? Is he the muscle-bound action star that we saw in so many 80s movies? No, as a matter of fact, he's somewhat of an anti-hero, someone that you would not typically find yourself rooting for in any other situation. Nicky is a drug addict. He's a hitman. Now, while Revolution Calling definitely establishes the type of world that our story takes place in that mirrors the other world of the 1980s America, Operation Mindcrime really establishes one of the key points that makes Nicky so relatable, as which is control. Nicky is obviously he's a drug addict being controlled by a puppet. We take a closer look at this. Nicky, in a sense, is us as a society. Nicky is the figure who is under control, has a place in the system, and only serves a purpose to benefit society at large. This is why Mindcrime is such an important album, because it strips away the facade of the flawless character, the flawless hero. We have a hero who is nothing but flaws, and a hero who does not have possess free will because of his addiction. In relation to another concept album, Roger Daltrey from The Who mentioned that Tommy, the child who is blind, deaf, and dumb, and who finds his calling through pinball and becomes a messiah in the modern world, he said that the story is still about all of us. And that's what Queensryche accomplished through Nicky. We are cogs in the machine. The system will always have a place for us to benefit them. And that is that's one of the core matters at the heart of the album. As the album progresses, we eventually come into one of probably the most satirical songs of the album, Spreading the Disease. Here, we're going to be introduced to Sister Mary, the love interest and another protagonist in the story, as well as a critique of the growing consumerism. The title itself could be easily seen as an allegory for the AIDS epidemic, which itself was a massive, massive phobia for much of middle America during the time. Spreading the Disease is what really establishes Sister Mary as a character. Talks about her, you know, being a runaway, being a sex worker, finding her place in the church, only to become a sexual object of a minor character in our story, Father William. She's Sister Mary now, eyes as cold as ice. He takes her once a week on the altar like a sacrifice. It's a very subversive lyric in which the clergy and religion in general are depicted as the villains of our story. Or one of the villains. Once again, this emphasizes the control
that the government has and both religion has over its followers. And really with Spreading Disease 2, there's a great spoken monologue where Tate talks about selling skin, selling God, the numbers look the same on the credit card. And this goes back to this all dials back to the televangelists at the time, a lot of which, you know, these figures who extol virtue and morality, but at the same time were caught in financial scandals and scandals that involved adultery. So basically, Spreading the Disease, you know, touches base on this, but there's also a line where it says, the politicians say no to drugs while we pay for wars in South America. This, of course, goes back to the quote-unquote war on drugs that was happening at the time. So basically, in the fictional world that takes place in Operation Mindcrime, you have the clergy and you have figures in power who are exuding complete control and are themselves symbols of hypocrisy, who are extolling morality but are in fact just as corrupt and vile as the fingers they are pointing. In both Nikki and Sister Mary, there's a tie that bonds them together, and that is, of course, control. You have the control of the drugs that are a hold of Nikki, and you have the control of Mary's situation of being, you know, tied to the cloth, and of course, the song describes the control that Father William has over her. So, once again, holding up a reflection to America of the 1980s, we see that the control that is forced upon us, via religion, the government, drug addiction, that is at the very core of this album, and that is what our protagonist is trying to escape. Spreading the Disease is one of the best satirical songs of the album, and really shows what was going on in the 1980s, and what certainly still exists today. This part of the story, it can also be rooted back to a book by Matthew Lewis entitled The Monk, which, if you really hold that book up to a lot of pieces of art, it relates to just about everything. That story follows a pious monk named Ambrosio, who exudes morality, virtue, but he gets taken down a dark path by something that ultimately controls him. So it shows that even those who have a holier-than-thou nature are themselves subject to corruption and vice, the same things that unite all of us as human beings. We are human beings, and we are subject to these things that, you know, can control us and ultimately be the cause of our own downfall. If Spreading the Disease establishes Mary as a character and gives us a window into the torment of her life, as did Operation Mindcrime did with Nikki, we see how strongly their fates are interwoven together in easily the high watermark of the album, Sweet Sister Mary, spelled S-U-I-T-E. This is a song of an epic proportion. Think Hallowed Be Thy Name or Sign of the Cross by Iron Maiden. A great, powerful number. It's the longest track on the album. It's filled with mood and melancholy atmosphere and very, very descriptive in the sights and sounds that permeate it. I mean, that opening, the choir, you know, Rockenfeld's, you know, accentuating the move with the drum, the arpeggiated guitar intro. Wilton and DeGarmo, that is a pure indication of their flawlessness as musicians and creating mood. The appearance of Pamela Moore doing a duet with Jeff Tate. Jeff Tate, of course, taking the voice of Nikki, Pamela Moore voicing Sister Mary. And here is really where the whole aspect of them being star-crossed lovers is really brought to the forefront. You know, Nikki, there's a line where Nikki says, "You made me wait so long for what you gave to everyone." He stresses the need to escape their confinement. There's a line where Tate sings, "We're being used and fed like rats in experiments." There is this overall feeling of helplessness between the two, that they cannot escape their situation. In this song in particular, we see Nikki really breaking out of his shell, breaking his chains. In the very beginning, there's a brief line from Dr. X where he says, you know, "You have to kill Mary, kill her, that's all you have to do." And he's told to, quote-unquote, get the priest as well. And this whole duet between Tate and Moore is just, it's the two lovers, you know, let's run away, let's be done with this, let's escape the shackles. And it really endears you to their cause. At that moment, you stop thinking of them as the ex-sex worker tied to the cloth who's abused, and the junkie who's being used as a cog in a machine. You see them as human beings. And this song is great songwriting, it's great mood, it brings you into the story. You're invested from this point forward. And if you ever own this album on cassette, you know this is the end of side one. This is the end of the first act. You've started to travel down the rabbit hole, abandon all hope, because we are about to enter the dark side of human nature very soon. Cold and shaking, I crawled down alleys to try and scrape away the tracks that marked me. Slammed my face into walls of concrete, I stared, amazed at the words written on the wall. Don't ever trust the needle, it lies. The Needle Lies is itself another song that takes on a double meaning. On one hand, we have Nicky confronting the scars of his addiction, which is a theme that has been established previously on the album. And here, it takes on a double meaning. The chorus of, don't trust the needle, it lies when it calls your name. While this is important to the story that's being told by Queensryche, it also manages to speak of the decade as well. As I mentioned before, the 80s were a time of the war on drugs. The cocaine wars that were going on in Miami, the crack cocaine epidemic. This was the me decade. This was a decade of excess, and it touched upon every part of society. It was a drug-addled time period. And The Needle Lies is sort of Queensryche saying, this is addressing our characters, it's addressing the people you love, it's addressing the people you know. And the addiction is itself bondage that needs to be broken. You get the sense from the song that Nicky is saying, this is the path I'm on, do not go down this road. The Needle Lies, which establishes the attempt to escape bondage, we come to death. Spoiler alert, Mary dies in Operation Mindcrime. Mary's death, for many, many years, was one of the most intriguing aspects of this album. Her fate was shrouded in mystery. And this goes back to something I've always believed with audience participation in any art form. You don't want to tell your audience everything. Some of the best films, some of the best artworks, some of the best songs have always left a window open to interpretation. Let your audience use their imagination. Art should always challenge you. Art should make you stop and think. If it has challenged you, if it's made you question something, it has done its job. As a fan of the Italian crime thriller known as Giallo, I can't tell you how many times I've sat there and watched the mystery unfold and thought to myself, is there a deeper meaning to this? What is the answer before the plot twist is revealed in the end? Now, this was something I didn't know until I did research for this podcast. It was revealed later on that Mary's death was a suicide. I'll touch on this a bit later, but it's really disappointing. This all ties into Operation Mindcrime Part 2, which was a follow-up that was released in the early 2000s. And despite having Ronnie James Dio cameo as Dr. X, it was a massive disappointment. First off, it was done without Chris DeGarmo. Every song on this album was written by Chris DeGarmo, so without his involvement, the songs aren't there. And Mindcrime, I feel, is one of those stories that, you know, when you get to the end of it, it drains you, and you want to sit back and reflect upon it and not worry about, oh my god, what happened to the other characters? No. No, no, no. One of the things that's executed well about Mary's death is there is no grand number. There is no ballad. There is no dirge. There's a short piece called Electric Requiem. Tate's delivery, while playing Nicky and just, Mary? Just the shock and the emotion comes through in just that one word. You just hear the words, even in death you still look sad. You see that they're dead. It strikes you because you realize this was the only way for her to escape her situation and her bondage. You just hear the reverberation of Tate's vocal, don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me. And it's a very somber moment. And then the album shifts gears into Breaking the Silence, in which we're introduced to the prospect of grief. Now, while Breaking the Silence has a lot of drive and a lot of power to it, it's definitely not a somber song. The lyrics that Tate wrote for this are very, very poignant. And it's not in a, oh baby, I miss you so much. It's very much a song like Gloomy Sunday, the Hungarian suicide song. It's a song that's just defeat and resignation. There's a wonderful line. I hear your voice in the evening rain calling. Nothing will keep us apart. No more lies and fear. There's no end to our story. And it's a very powerful lyric because it's, if you want to compare Nikki and Mary to Romeo and Juliet, the star-crossed lovers who eventually meet their end in a very tragic way, this certainly addresses that prospect. You know, there is no end. There is no end to it. There is no final resolution. What it ultimately becomes in the end is no more pain. There's freedom. There's only sorrow on Nikki's behalf. And as the audience, as we're listening to this, we think, well, what happens now? There has to be retribution. We want retribution. We want Dr. X and this organization to fail. And as we see so many times in the world in which we live, that's not the case. Sometimes the bad guys win. So many times in this not-so-perfect world of ours, evil triumphs. And we just have to sit back and ask ourselves what once was and what will never be. If you get that reference, you're fucking awesome. I don't believe in love. Very much a declarative statement from Nikki. And really, with this song in particular, this is one of the more popular songs of the album. I've met several people who say, who don't care for Queensryche, and they will tell me, oh, but I love the song I Don't Believe in Love. Because it's almost the antithesis of the power ballad, which was a staple of so many albums at the time. As we're approaching the final act of Operation Mindcrime, we really see the ultimate tragedy in all of this. And we have, with Mary's death being firmly established earlier, we're wondering, well, what happens? And, well, the answer is very simple. Nikki, the hero, the anti-hero, who we have rallied behind, who we've seen be controlled and be manipulated by the system, by Dr. X, he becomes the condemned man. He is blamed for Mary's death. And the song opens up with this overlap of voices, you know, we know you did it, we know you did it. And the music video does a very, very good job depicting everything that happens from Mary's death to this moment. I will go on record and say that aside from the music video for Revolution Calling, it's the best music video that was made for the album. This also brings up one of the problems I had with Mary's death given a resolution several years later, or given an answer rather. The music video, you know, has the band playing like a lot like you would expect, but there's a lot of images of Nikki being interrogated by the police. There's images of Mary in the chapel, and you see Father William, you see a priest come in. It might not be Father William, it might be. You see Dr. X come in. You see Nikki come in. You see Nikki and Mary talking. You see Mary holding a knife. You see Nikki standing over her body in just complete, utter disarray and defeat. And so, there's a mystery within the video itself, and you're wondering, who is the guilty party? Is this framed? Did Nikki snap and murder Mary in cold blood? Well, here's a little anecdote in regards to this. When Queensryche released their Empire album, they became pop culture icons. They were on top of the world. And I remember when this album came out because I remember my sister getting the cassette single for Silent Lucidity, and that was the summer of Queensryche. She went out, bought up all the albums, made me copies. It was awesome. And I remember sitting on the floor of our living room and my sister watching this music video three times in a row, rewinding the VHS tape and trying to figure out what happened. And my sister's a very smart cookie, very, very smart person, you know, straight A student. And she is just transfixed on this mystery. And that's why giving the resolution all the years later is kind of disappointing, because with I Don't Believe in Love, the music video anyway, there's a mystery. And you show a movie, you show something to 13 different people, you're going to get 13 different answers. And this is a great video that has great storytelling and kind of leaves you in the dark. Doesn't have a definitive answer. The song really has some amazing, amazing lyrics that Tay composed. There's one line in particular. She made a difference. I guess she had a way of making every night seem bright as day. Now I walk in shadows, never see the light. She must have lied because she never said goodbye. There's a mention of there's a very subtle mention of a suicide pact with the lyric of, she said she'd meet me on the other side, but I knew right then I'd never find her. So that's possibly alluding to maybe a suicide pact or them trying to escape their clutches and this being the outcome. And aside from this being the anti-love ballad, it's just a great song, and you really see the devastation that Nikki now is forced to live. And this segues into two back-to-back instrumental pieces, Waiting for 22 and My Empty Room. And then we see we see Nikki condemned. We see him in this state of isolation. And when this album finally comes to its last song, its final moment, this is a coup de grace. This is how you end a story. This is Eyes of a Stranger. And this is a really powerful song, and it still to this day sends a chill up my spine. Like so many other songs on the album, this has great buildup. It starts off slow. There's hospital chatter, so you get the feeling that we're in maybe an institution or a hospital for the criminally insane. And it slowly builds and builds and builds. And out of nowhere, we're hit with DeGarmo and Wilton's incredible guitar work, and we get a lament. We get a sort of dirge from Nikki reflecting on this moment in his life. And there's some very sorrowful lyrics that Tate, again, Tate, aside from being one of the best voices of the 1980s, he is an incredible lyricist. We're going to see on the Empire album him be able to craft pop songs with that have a very melodic metal edge to them. But Eyes of a Stranger really is some incredible, incredible lyrics that really depict the situation perfect. Is this all that's left of my life before me? Straitjacket memories, sedative highs. No happy ending like they always promised. There's got to be something left for me. Again, this is a story in which evil wins. There is no resolution. And the song is Nikki in mourning, but it's also him reflecting and talking about being haunted by the image of Mary and her death. And like so many great stories in the past, there's the presence of a mirror. And in which Nikki cannot no longer recognize who he has become through the addiction and his ordeal. If you've read Night by Eli Wiesel, there's a very powerful way in which the book ends. After surviving the Holocaust and going through this unspeakable, horrible ordeal, he talks about coming home from the camp, looking into the mirror, and not recognizing the corpse in front of him. And that's what Queensryche have somewhat replicated here with Eyes of a Stranger. It's this person who, after all this, the attempts at escape, the want of a positive resolution of something greater than the situation he was formerly in, he cannot bear to see the person and the being he has become. And it's a very powerful song. There's a wonderful line where it talks about him seeing, you know, the rosary wrapped around Mary's throat. We might ask ourselves, how does a song like this end? This is the end of our story. It's very empty, and it shatters the preconception we always have for a story such as this, which is good has to triumph, and there has to be, you know, a happy ending. Thank God that that's not the case, because I can't imagine this story ending with a happy ending. I think would greatly diminish the album. Operation Mindcrime is a near perfect album. The way they end this, almost like a bombardment of information. The overlapping sound, the songs that have been recorded all coming into one, all the memories flooding back, and then the distorted voice yelling about revolution as it was in the beginning with Revolution Calling. It's perfect. All the memories coming back bombard our protagonist with this almost distortion of reality. And then there's a brief, brief silence, and then this is how this masterpiece of an album finishes.
I remember now.
Much like the great Greek tragedies of old, we have a piece of art that begins and ends at the same moment. Our protagonist, alone, in darkness, with only memories.
that is how you end a story and an album of such a grandiose scale.
Now, earlier I mentioned about the long-awaited sequel that came out much later. And aside from the songs not being there, and aside from a cameo from Ronnie James Dio, an album like, a story like this doesn't need a follow-up. An album like this does not warrant a follow-up. It's just perfect the way it is from start to finish. There's not a moment that isn't powerful, that isn't moving, that doesn't hit you at your very core. This is just incredible guitar playing, miraculous composition, great lyrics. I've met people who aren't even super into metal. They're casual listeners, and they'll tell me, oh, Operation Mindcrime. I love that album. And there is no way to follow this up. This is a one-of-a-kind. If you've never listened to it, and you're listening to this, go out, buy a physical copy of the album. If you're going to stream it. But you should always buy physical media. Buy the album. Do it. After this, Queensryche would return a few years later with Empire, which, as I mentioned previous, you know, had big, big hooks, big production, big singles, songs such as Silent Lucidity, Best I Can, Jet City Woman, Another Rainy Night Without You, really kind of put them on top of the world for a brief moment. Unfortunately, there was this one other band from Seattle, Queensryche's hometown, called Nirvana, and, well, they kind of did this thing with an album called Nevermind that completely changed the cultural landscape of entertainment as we know it. But, I digress, Operation Mindcrime is Queensryche's finest hour. This is a moment where, this is where they stood among a lot of their contemporaries and proved that metal was a genre that was capable of complex storytelling. It was capable of providing a wonderful social satire. They were not afraid to hold up a reflection to the ugliness of the world that we live in. I firmly believe that even now, you could look at this album now and look at it and listen to the lyrics and realize that the messages that Queensryche brought to us, the satire, the commentary, it is as powerful and much of it reflects the society we live in today, just as it did in 1988. I'm Jerome Reuter. Thank you so much for joining me on the debut episode of Metal Storm, and I will see you next time.